Welcome to Extra Points. Now here's your host, Cousin Sal, and his pal, Dave Damaschek.
All right, welcome to Extra Points Friday edition. Cousin Sal coming to you. Spaghetti and meatballs behind the glass. Oh, a gloomy spaghetti after the Giants lost last night. We're going to get into that. Martin Weiss is here. We got babyface Joel Solomon producing this whole mess. And my dear, dear pal, Dave Damaschek. Check. Let's just launch right in. I feel like on minus three, you sat down with Spaghetti, and Spaghetti was wearing a Dexter Lawrence jersey. What is that, 97? A Dexter Lawrence jersey, and that is the gentleman who jumped off sides, giving Washington football team another chance at a game-winning field goal, and they nailed it. Am I right or am I wrong?
I think you've covered all details accurately. You did skip out on the bucket hat that Eddie Spaghetti wore needlessly. Oh. On minus three with a chinny strap. But yes, not unlike a heavy set Eddie Spaghetti, Dexter Lawrence launched himself over the line of scrimmage and cost the Giants. But to hang it on just one Giant would be unfair to several other Giants. Am I correct in saying
yes,
that?
Yes, I think if you hang it on one, it should be, was it Slayton that dropped the touchdown pass? I mean, right off his hand. Spaghetti, jump in here. I know you're miserable. I wish you would announce it right here, but you could say it again. You said yesterday might have been the worst day of your life. Washington wins 30-29 in week two. Is that so?
Yeah, that was definitely one of the worst games ever. I mean, multiple points. The Giants should have won that game, whether, like you said, the Slayton drop, the phantom holding call on the long DJ rushing touchdown, Dexter Lawrence, you know, popping off sides. Apparently, I've been reading too that somebody said they thought the center slightly moved his hand, which is what caused Dex to jump off sides. But I don't know. Yes. It was just so miserable. Taylor Heinicke coming in here and scoring 30 points in this Giants defense that was supposed to be good. You know, there should be more criticism on the damn defense over what Daniel Jones did, which, by the way, was the best performance of his career statistically. So,
yeah,
it's just there's an easier game next week versus the Falcons, but this would have been good to get a division win.
The game was good. Everyone thought it was going to be a dog. And by the way, next Thursday, not great either on paper. It's who is it? It's Carolina at Houston or Houston at Carolina. One of those. I don't know where it is, but. Yeah, I know. That's a rough one. But Martin, I don't know. I looked up. First of all, 30-29, great ending. Not really sloppy. The first turnover was when Heinicke threw the fourth quarter pick that the Giants only turned into a field goal. But you looked up and both quarterbacks were like 20 for 26, right? It was a decent game.
I actually tweeted about this. I said one of these quarterbacks is on his fourth team. And one of these quarterbacks was the sixth pick in the draft. And to add to Eddie Spaghetti's terrible day, he decided he wanted to go back and forth with it. And this is the thing I don't understand about, like, yeah, Daniel Jones probably played the best statistical game of his career, but he was going toe-to-toe with a guy who literally was a backup in the XFL. Like, I just can't understand. Like, we were sitting here having a conversation. Is Taylor Heinicke better than Daniel Jones? Which sounds crazy to me. How low is the ceiling for the sixth pick in the draft where that is, like, where we're talking about right now?
Well, it is an interesting, at best.
Yeah.
What are you supposed to say now with Daniel Jones where he is? Do you feel as a Giants guy? I mean, there's 15 more games to figure this out, but is that your franchise QB? Is he really a guy that you see having your team in contention season after season? I don't know, but in the meantime, the main culprit is the one who no one has mentioned yet. His name is Joe Judge. How do you, when you're a guy like you're running laps and this is the way we run it and attention to detail and I'm a special teams guy, and when those screw-ups are happening with those specific areas, then it has to fall on the head man, right? I mean, that's who you got to be sick with. I'm weird. The Slayton drop, it wasn't a perfect ball, by the way. He was wide open.
It was pretty good.
Did you really feel like that was straight up Slayton's fault?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't think that was a great ball in that spot from the aforementioned DJ, whereas the rest of us know him, Daniel Jones or Danny Dimes. But one thing for sure.
Takes off. Yeah.
Eddie Spaghetti must wear, I hereby decree, if you missed it on minus three, I encourage you to look at it. He wore a ridiculous bucket hat, one of those silly fishing guy blue hats. And he wore the chinny strap. I decree he must wear it until the Giants win a football game. Do you agree with that?
I'm fine with that. But Spaghetti, the 97. I mean, who else yesterday wore a number 97 on a podcast? And I mean, well, that is Dexter Lawrence, right? That's not Kiwanuka, right? It's a Dexter Lawrence jersey.
It was Dexter Lawrence, and I did say on minus three that I was doing my part to help the team win because I believe in the past, my superstitions, they've driven me to that bucket hat and that Dexter Lawrence jersey. I think we won a game when I wore that, so I tried to wear that. Oh, and let me just jump in quickly on Martin's point here, comparing Heinicke to Dalen Jones. The reason why that point makes zero sense is Tom Brady was a six-round pick.
But so the
it's like if you're gonna compare it to that, it's like, well, then no quarterback drafted first overall ever live up to what Tom Brady has accomplished in the NFL. You're comparing the two individual players. I mean, like, I know people in the NFL are prisoner of the moment. They don't like factoring in the outside elements of the quarterback. It's like, this quarterback has to give us, you know, 11 wins his rookie season, throw for 4,000 yards. If he doesn't, he's terrible. Let's get rid of him and find a new guy on the cheap. But it's like COVID off seasons, changing head coaches. This is the year two of Jason Garrett's offense. No Saquon. They didn't really have weapons last year. It's unfair to compare the two. And most people that follow the NFL thought that the WFT were a far superior team than the Giants anyway. So not shocked that Heinicke is playing well because his team around him is better.
He did well against what everyone considered a top two or three defense. We may have to ditch that narrative soon enough. They have some very good players who create some problems for quarterbacks throughout the game. I think they had like three or so. I'm seeing, by the way, our friend Josh Gardner, who we're going to have later on. He's in the waiting room. I told him 1 o'clock. All right. It doesn't. He's going to have to wait. He's going to be a waiting MF-er. But go ahead, Martin. Defend yourself. I don't blame Daniel Jones. I think he's like 10th on the list of the problems for the Giants yesterday.
I don't think that he's again, he played a great game yesterday. But first of all, we had to stop bringing up Tom Brady in these quarterbacks. He stands alone. The reason why we know that Tom Brady was the 199th pick is because nobody else, like from the fourth round on, does this type of thing. Russell Wilson is like he was a late pick. But that's about it. Everybody else, mm-hmm. if you're drafted up there and towards the top and you compare him to Tom Brady, I understand. But like a more accurate comparison to me would be like Justin Herbert, who had, I mean, all types of injuries, lost his coach his first year, all that. Nobody is looking at Justin Herbert and saying, like, that guy doesn't have it.
Well, they're saying it about Tua, who was drafted immediately before Herbert. Of course, there are different ways to skin a cat to get your franchise QB. The most consistent path is in the first round, but it doesn't mean everybody drafted in the first round is going to pan out and be worthy of a second big-time contract. That's the issue here. Obviously, Russell Wilson, Dak Prescott's another guy who has one of those big deals. So it's not as though the only way to do it is with a high first round pick. I'm more interested, though, in Eddie Spaghetti. I mean, by the way, today he's spaghetti al dente with a little arrabbiata. He's very spicy today. Be careful where you step there, Martin Weiss. Spaghetti, you're upset with Jeff Schwartz, too, I see online. Schwartz is bad-mouthing the Giants on Twitter. And then and you say that he hates the Giants. How say you on this?
I'm kind of over Jeff's like trolling efforts on Twitter. Like, yeah, Jeff, I get it. The Giants have not been good since 2016. But it's like there are other bad franchises in the NFL. And he goes hard against the Giants. Meanwhile, the Giants paid him. He was a Giant. The Giants gave him a contract. It's like, go after the Lions, go after the Jets. Like, I'm not saying they don't need criticism. Of course they do. I criticize them. But it's like, he gets all these snarky remarks, and then he, like, quote tweets people and is like, oh, yeah. Like, oh, I wonder why Giants fans are so mad. They're so angry. It's like, because you're getting everyone's skin being a jerk about it.
I kind of think Spaghetti's being nice about it. He thinks that Jeff Schwartz stole from the Giants. He doesn't want to say it. He's being nice, and he doesn't think he has the right to say anything about it because he feels he stole from them. Go ahead, Spaghetti. You could admit it.
If somebody paid me, I'm not going to, Sal, you pay me. I'm never going to badmouth
you. You'll be talking in the shit history about of my life. Years. I know.
Never. I'll never ever do that. Again, they deserve criticism, but it's a little much.
Let's not live life in the rearview mirror, Eddie Spaghetti. Last week, though, I do have to revisit the near background. A week ago, you said, I'm done with sports after Notre Dame almost lost to Toledo. And the Giants lost. You said, that's it for sports. You went back and you watched the game. You did this to yourself. Let's look ahead, though. As you mentioned, the Falcons in New Jersey next week. I mean, are you going to be wearing the bucket hat after that game? Yes or no?
Well, you want me to wear the bucket hat for the rest of the season until they get a win.
Until at least they get a win.
the reason why this loss to WFT was crushing was because if they win that game, and I think the Falcons game is a winnable game, a 2-1 record after the, you know, debacle week one, they don't look so bad now. If they lose this game week three, I think it's like, you got to pull the plug on Gettleman, on Jones, on Garrett. Ooh. And unfortunately, I think Joe Judge too. It's like, you cannot start 0-3 to these, to two bad teams, at least one bad team, one mediocre team. The Falcons have a real shot of being the worst team.
Okay.
In the NFL.
Are they going to be 0-3 or not? The Giants.
I'll predict that. I'll say that they're going to win the game. All right. The Giants are going to win the game.
There you go.
The 0-3 start, those are the consequences. Everyone's on the hot
Broadway
seat.
Broadway spaghetti. All right. Giants are now, I want to move on from this. A plus 750 to win the NFC East. Listen, it's still the NFC East. 750 might not be bad.
You know? Sal's team's going to be 0-2. I mean, Dallas, the Cowboys.
Dallas going to lose. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what to think of this. The one thing I'll say about Dexter Lawrence, it does seem when you go risk-reward for getting a head start, got a 3% chance even with the head start to block the kick versus you go offside, you're giving him a chance to win the game. The risk seemed crazy versus the reward. No, Martin?
No, well, I understand that everybody's focused on Dexter Lawrence jumping offside. Yeah. But Taylor Heinicke threw an interception with 2 minutes and 17 seconds left in the fourth quarter and had the ball back with 1:58 left. If the Giants get a first down, the game's over.
Yep.
All right. We don't need to rub it in anymore to spaghetti. But if you think you know football, hit our Extra Points Arcade. That's extrapoints.com/arcade. We got a pick'em contest, a prop culture contest. Oh, it's based on the Emmys. Lots of fun stuff there. And a prop quiz with Sheck one out of hundreds of entries. Check one. Can you believe that? Big
yes,
prize. We're not getting you a prize check. No, you're not getting anything. Extrapoints.com/arcade. Free to play. Prizes galore. Do it up. Hit it up. I mentioned Josh Gardner is going to be on. He's a friend of ours. He wrote with us, Check. We've known him many, many years.
I remember that.
I'm torn having him on because he's about the funniest guy I've ever met. And, you know, we're going to have him tell stories about Norm MacDonald. I mean, hopefully those will be funny as well, but he was very close with Norm. He worked closely with Norm for many, many years, and they have almost exactly the same sense of humor. And I'm not positive that Josh stole it from him. It might have been the other way around.
Risque introduction for him, but now we'll put a pin in that.
I'm building it up too much. Anyway, he's going to come on. Is he not one of the funniest guys? I mean, it's not fair, right? Everything he says. When he bombs, it's funnier than when it's
right. I'm not going to make my list for fear of leaving somebody off. But, you know, me is the fly on the wall for the last two decades of knowing some of the funniest people on the planet Earth and my good fortune to be in that spot. I mean, he's definitely way, way up there. The J-Man.
Is he funnier than when Jeff Schwartz goes off on the Giants? I mean, that's pretty funny, too. But I don't know.
It's not as funny as when Eddie Spaghetti gets mad about other people insulting his football team. But the J-Man, nevertheless, is way up there on the list. Yeah.
All right. Let's turn to NFL. Raiders, Steelers. It's a fun one. It's always a fun one, even when you're a 6.5-point favorite at home. 46.5 is the over-under. This team has lots of history. The recent history, not so great for the Steelers. I don't know. Now someone's going to come back at me with a record. Like, no, they beat them more than they lose to them. But I do remember a Troy Smith, like, 85-yard run or something. Terrell Pryor. Sorry, that's right. It was Terrell Pryor. Troy Smith did it, too. I'm looking up here. I see a lot. Anyway, Sheck, lots of history. Give us your win, play, show, Raiders, Steelers moments. I think I know what win is, but.
Well, you're right. The 21st century, when they go head to head, has been inexplicably. Yeah, it's a great rivalry from the 20th century because they were both high end teams. They were real juggernaut, iconic pro football brands in the 70s, especially. In the 21st century, the Steelers have remained good. The Raiders have been, generally speaking, putrid. And yet, the Raiders have almost every time beaten it. Bruce Gradkowski in Heinz Field, Terrell Pryor for 90 yards over in the East Bay. The Steelers missed the playoffs largely because they lost to that bum Raiders team a few years ago. That's what kind of exacerbated the Antonio Brown, Ben Roethlisberger rift in part. But anyway, yes, quickly, 1975. These teams played each other consistently in January's to get to the Super Bowl. Right. The Steelers almost every time won those games. In 1975, in Three River Stadium, Al Davis, always the conspiracy theorist, accused the Steelers of icing down outside the hash marks to slow down Cliff Branch. As Al Davis said, one of my favorite quotes from him, if there was one man that Mel Blount feared in the NFL, it was Clifford Branch. Clifford Branch.
That's Al Davis? He sounds like the NFL Films guy. Was he the guy all along? I had no idea.
My range is only so great. I'm not a master impressionist.
That show.
Okay. I'm gonna go just to get one in here in the 21st century. They didn't even clash, but it's because of Tom Brady and that tuck rule. You heard about that play in the divisional round in the snow. If that doesn't happen, the Raiders come to Heinz Field to play Pittsburgh with a trip to the Super Bowl on the line. The Steelers were mighty that year. So too were the Raiders. How Brady and the Patriots started their dynastic role is a shame. It's a fraud. And it disgusts me that it happened, because that would have been a classic for all of time. Okay, Gannon v. Cordell doesn't exactly summon memories of Snake v. Bradshaw, but Lusty just the same. And then, of course, the number one, because it's
the greatest. Wait, the place is that they would have played each other?
That's right. And once again, we should all be spiteful towards the Patriots for interrupting what would have been a better result for all of our eyeballs, instead of watching Belichick and company go in a Super Bowl that they got to because they were watching videotapes of what the other team was doing offensively, including Kurt Warner's Rams in before that Super Bowl. That was true. And it was the same thing that was true when they played the Steelers in Heinz Field. How do you think they beat a 9.5-point spread? Is that what it was, Sal? Was that what it was? I know you know it, because I know you had the Steelers covering that and you had the Rams to make it up in the Super Bowl. And I sat by you in that Super Bowl and we were both sick at our balls.
The Rams was 13. That was sickening. All right. So win has to be the immaculate reception.
No, actually, I'm going to go with a 1983. Yeah, no, that's of course, the immaculate reception, the greatest play in pro football, nay, sports history. And of course, it has such a high place on the banks of the Three Rivers that when you unload from the plane, you come out and what do you see when you're going down the escalators into Pittsburgh, PA at the airport? You see the father of our nation, George Washington, statue, and right next to it, Franco Harris making the immaculate reception. I never miss a chance to hold up one of my children in front of it to make it look like Franco and I are delivering one of my children. The immaculate
reception. Martin, that hit the ground, Martin, right?
No.
If we had replay.
That's not even the controversy.
What do you mean it's not a controversy? There's no picture of it. Of course, it's a controversy. Why? Because you put a statue up in your airport. There's no
controversy. Now, the bigger controversy is whether or not the ball, who did it hit? Frenchie Fuqua or Jack Tatum? Because based on the rules, it depends who it hits if the play should have stood. They wouldn't, as you say, though. Well, in the 21st century, they would have enough cameras to figure it out. Right?
I don't know, Martin. I think that's a trap.
I 100% feel like your win would be invalidated on further review, and then I'm throwing a red challenge flag on your place because. We're talking win, play, show of Steelers, Raiders moments. And this is a moment that did not occur.
What could have been?
Right. Okay, then you know what? Then go with the Raiders 1976 AFC title game win when they finally get over the hump and get to the Super Bowl. The Raiders finally get it. They finally vanquish their arch rival, Pittsburgh Steelers, in the East Bay. Oh, little asterisk next to that. The greatest defense in NFL history was undone by the fact that the Steelers had no running backs to play in that game. Oh, but the Raiders were so mighty. They went on to beat the pathetic Vikings in the Super Bowl, just as the Steelers would have. But I will say, in 1972, if the Steelers don't win, if the immaculate reception doesn't happen, and Snake Stabler survives that game, they host, by the rules, the undefeated Dolphins. Or I'm sorry, the game's down in Miami, I should say, and the Raiders go over to Miami. But that favors the sling it around Raiders, not the ground and pound Dolphins. The Raiders would have won that. They had the Dolphins number in that era. It would have been the Raiders and the Washington Redskins in Super Bowl VII. There would have been no undefeated season. What that means for the 70s might favor the Cowboys going down as the greatest team of the 20th century, Sal. But anyway, that's a quick what if for you.
I'm taking the Raiders this week. I like what I saw out of them. They could have given up. 14-0. Well, I like them for the season. I like the West. You know that. I like six teams out of the West divisions, the AFC and NFC. I think the Raiders are one of them. Gutty performance, down 14-0, came back. And Steelers, maybe, I don't know, maybe physical game against that Buffalo team. I know it's a short week. I know there's a little travel here, but I'm taking the points. I don't know that the Steelers offense can blow the Raiders out here. Martin, you taking the points or are you laying almost a touchdown?
Well, I got it early in the week when it was, I think it was Steelers minus 5, and it's now moved to 6.5. 6.5 feels like a little heavy for me, but I just saw the Raiders, and I feel like they should have lost that game to Baltimore so many different times, and they were getting hit. They lost their offensive linemen, and Pittsburgh impressed me against against Buffalo, even though that Buffalo wasn't great. And I think that Pittsburgh is probably going to be, you know, have a good September and tail off towards the end of the year because the quarterback is old.
Well, that'll be there. You're right. I mean, they're 0-3 against the spread in the last three as a favorite. Check a touchdown too much here? You could say that.
Yeah, I think so. No, I'll take the Steelers on the money line at best. I like with this game specifically player props more than I do like engaging the team results here. I like Najee Harris to go over 71.5. I think we'll see a closer version of what people anticipated from him coming into the season than you did again, than what you saw against the Bills. I think he'll have a nice game. By the way, throw a little something on Derek Carr rolling into town. You can get him over 6.5. You know he's going to be scrambling around against that pass rush. He's going to run for over 6.5 yards in that game. So you can get a nice little little two-guy parlay out of that one.
6.5 is an integral number here.
It's a big number. I do call, I mean, listen, I completely understand that the Steelers got 16, you know, scratched out 16 points offensively. That remember that one touchdown comes on special teams. On the other hand, though, contextualize it as best you can. We only have 60 minutes worth of evidence to go off of with these Raiders. But, I mean, a lot of it is predicated on, like, Raiders, not as bad as I thought because they beat the Ravens. But are we sure that the Ravens are the Ravens that a lot of people thought they were going to be? The answer is no. That offensive line is atrocious. I know the Steelers, it ain't great either.
Well, we'll see. 6.5 is the number. FanDuel's got
home crowd should be helpful, though. The Steelers have not been in front of a home crowd in quite some time. That's going to be a jacked up crowd.
Either way, I don't expect either of these teams to be the high scorer of the week. But FanDuel's got numbers out for high scoring team. I love this. I love stuff like this. Who is the favorite here? It's Tampa Bay. I pulled off of it. I went to look at something else.
Yeah, it was Tampa.
Here we go. Tampa's the favorite. Martin, who do you like for high scorer of the week?
I was going with the Cleveland Browns. They're 11-1. And I think because I was looking at this, for whatever reason in my head, I figured that the high score of the week is going to be somewhere between 35 and 42 points. Mm-hmm. And so I figure that I just see a game in which they're up on the Browns are up on the Texans 27-10, and they're just running the ball, and Chubb hits a home run, or Hunt hits a home run, and that puts me over.
Wrong sport, Mark. Wrong sport. Okay. I know what you're saying.
No, but that hits me. That puts me over the top because all the other teams are going to be – I feel like Cleveland is the team that is set up to run the ball, like to take the air out of the ball and still be able to score.
Yeah, that's a tough thing, right? When you're going against, 1-0 Texans, but they're a dozen-point underdog. So when you pick a team to be the high scorer, I wonder if it is a team that has the biggest spread because typically they'll sit their starters late in the fourth quarter or midway through the fourth quarter. But Browns 11-1, nice value there. I check high-scoring team. What do you say?
Yeah, exactly what you're talking about. Right. I was looking at the Browns, and I was thinking the Chiefs because it feels like those Chiefs-Ravens games tend to go I'm looking in the rearview mirror, but it feels like the Chiefs jump on them, then the Ravens try to backdoor them, and then Mahomes like, let's put this away once and for all. And that's maybe the path to getting the Chiefs. Too easy for Damashek, though. Chargers at home, shootout against the Cowboys. Yeah. I'm going to take the Chargers plus 1,200. That game's going to be a dynamite one. That might be, in fact, the game of the week to take a look at. The Cowboys dropped 0-2.
So many injuries and stupid crap now happening with these Cowboys. Lil Collins fails the test. Oh, no, he didn't take the test. Good job. He actually didn't take the test. And Lawrence and all these other injuries. I don't love it. Yeah, Chargers might just go crazy. I am going with the Chiefs. You say it's easy, 10-1. They're still playing the Ravens, but I saw some things I like. First of all, you're right, check. 33 points scored against the Ravens, 34 points 2 years ago. So they're right in that range anyway. They don't ever face them in the playoffs because the Ravens get bounced early, but those were regular season games where they scored 67 over the last 2 years. I don't know. I saw Derek Carr underthrow about 8 guys last week, and I'm thinking like, oh my God, if this is Mahomes, this is, you know, they're going to score 3 times a quarter. I don't think that's what it'll add up to, but I think 10-1 for the Chiefs over the Ravens is a good deal. And let me tell you, FanDuel is not done with this Chiefs-Ravens game. They love it. Sunday night, yes, biggest game. FanDuel Sportsbook, about to make it even bigger, giving new customers 30-1 odds on either team to win. Either team. You can end the weekend right by winning $150 on a $5 bet. Yes, there's a same game parlay also. You could do that. This is what you do with the same game parlay. So you can take adjusted odds. You take the Chiefs minus 6.5. I'm going to put that with over 59.5. And the Chiefs over 14.5 in the first half. Before this year, you couldn't do anything like this. Your bookmaker would look at you smack in the face and then spit on your shoes. Plus 551. You put those three together. That is a winner for me. It's easy to use. Safe and secure. Fast payouts. FanDuel sports betting. Made simple. Hooking you up with great offers. Plus, when you win, you get paid in as little as 24 hours. Sign up with promo code EXTRAPOINTS this Sunday before the Chiefs take on the Ravens. Win $150 on a $5 bet. Remember to use promo code EXTRAPOINTS so they know we sent you. You must wager in a designated offer market. Max bonus, like I said, $150. See full terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Restrictions apply. Yes, if you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit FanDuel.com/RG in Colorado, Iowa, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Virginia. 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana. 1-800-270-7117 in Michigan. And the TN Red Line, 1-800-889-9789 in Tennessee. That's the one I'm at. I am in Tennessee right now. Visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia. So lots of good stuff there. I was looking at the MVP odds. And I think it's fun to bet like four or five of these, just so you have an "I told you so" moment there. Stafford is now second. Is that a little premature, Shaq? Stafford second after the 1 week? He had Van Jefferson, like everyone's like, oh my God. And now it's Mahomes 6-1, Stafford 8-1, Brady 9-1. If you could add one, I forgot who you took in the beginning of the year. Did you take Josh Allen?
No, I didn't take Josh Allen. I'm fading the Bills this year.
Right.
Don't you forget.
That's right.
Who did I take this year? I can't remember who I had as the MVP, but I'll tell you.
Did you take Baker? Did you take it ironically, take Baker or something like that?
There's no irony, Sal. This is the Browns' year. And by the way, I'm kind of with Martin that the Browns, I know that they're a heavy favorite. And I did, by the way, take that 10-point three-way teaser. Tease down the Browns to -2.5, the Bucks down to -2.5, and the Packers down to -1.5. Get that at FanDuel as well. I'm looking at the MVP, the intermediate type of QBs here. Derek Carr, you can get at +5,000. This is an exercise. It's premature. What are we doing picking MVPs this early in the season? I suppose it's owed to.
Well, this is when you get odds. I mean, I know, if you're just right, going to talk about it, sorry, Martin, Skip, and Shen, it's one thing. But if you want to get value on odds,
I get it.
This is exactly when you talk about.
Well, as far as yes, and your strategy as an exercise, that's exactly right. I'm with you. If Derek Carr goes into Pittsburgh and then he's sitting at 2-0, going to be pretty interesting. You can get him at +5,000 right now. Do you buy that the Bungles are going to be relevant in the AFC North? If you do, also at +5,000. Same goes for CMC in Charlotte, North Carolina. Teddy B, you can get at that number. I like those guys that have juicy odds next to
them. Have no
name
chance
right
of
now.
Winning. Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's a good way to do it.
I mean, you're the one who picked the Raiders to go to the playoffs. If I don't think they're going to, but if they do on Derek Carr's right arm, then it stands to reason that he would be an MVP. No.
All right. Well, here's what I did. I can't talk here because I took two players. I took my theory is if I was if I was an advisor, a financial advisor, I'd say take the Chiefs to win the Super Bowl. Take Mahomes to win MVP every year. You'll cash in the next 3 years, and you're getting 5 or 6-1 odds on that. So I stick with Mahomes at 6-1. I think I also had Josh Allen 12-1. Boy, Russell Wilson at 13-1. If he is throwing the ball consistently like he did last week against what was not a bum defense in the Colts, I mean, he had two of the best throws of his life. It's Tyler Lockett last week.
Sal,
maybe that
on.
Does it. Maybe 13-1 is not bad right now. You know he's always in contention in December, Mark.
How about this? I'll pay you 5-1 if we can never have the conversation about Russell Wilson being an MVP in week 2. What are we doing already? Can we just give it to Russell Wilson already so we can stop having the... I'm not talking about betting-wise.
What's your problem
I'm talking
with
about
it?
In general. Because it's just an endless conversation about, did you know Russell Wilson? It's getting to be Tom Brady was a six-round draft pick, and Ryan Fitzpatrick went to Harvard.
We just listened to you say Teddy Bridgewater is good value. So I feel like I have good stand on with this
one. No, I hear you. I mean, philosophically, what are we doing giving somebody an MVP award in week one or two? It's the same thing as last year. It's a repeat.
I don't understand why, like, last year everybody was so indignant that Russell Wilson had never gotten an MVP vote before. Like, if you go back and look at the individual awards, it makes all the sense in the world why he would not have. However, this year in season 2021, this year, the MVP is coming from the NFC West, and he's going to be the quarterback of the NFC. Whatever team wins the NFC West. So with that, I'm going with Kyler at plus 900, and I'm going with, Mr. Unlimited at plus 1300.
Nice. I like it. You know what? That's not a bad way to do it. If you get Kyler 9-1, Russell 13-1, Stafford 8, and then what am I missing?
Trey Lance, Jimmy G. Rookie of the year.
You don't know.
It'd be Trey Lance. Jimmy G is
80 and Trey Lance is 100, so sprinkle a little on that. That's a decent way to look at it. I think, like, I had the coach of the year coming from the AFC East. So it's a good way to go 0-4 or corner. Wow, Kyle Murray really jumped the ranks there. Had a great game against Tennessee and is now 9-1. Yeah, he's right up there with Tom Brady.
Boy, it really is deja vu, because while everybody else was talking Russell Wilson 1 year ago at this time, Martin Weiss just said the name that I was saying over and over again in the preseason and through the first 2 months of 2020. I was pushing Kyler Murray hard, if you'll recall that. But yes, that's an interesting way to do it.
I lost a bet to Chris Broussard over that, about Kyler Murray being the MVP. I had to pay him $200 to buy a pair of shoes. Well,
you guys, name dropped early. It's amazing. Lots of name dropped on your behalf. Hey, the Colts are doing an in-season Hard Knocks. What is this, Babyface Solomon? Who's going to watch this?
Megan Gailey, the Colts committee, fan of the Colts. Yeah. And I think a few other people. But yeah, the Colts are, for the first time ever, they're doing in-season Hard Knocks, so we can enjoy seeing Carson Wentz being 6 feet away from his teammates.
Yeah, I don't know what this, I don't know, man. The Cowboys, I struggle to watch the Cowboys. So it's what is this? This is in-season. It's going to be on HBO. It's called Hard Knocks. I'm trying to see how it's different. When does it start? Later during the regular season.
I think the only difference, Sal, is 3-8. I think it's just happening in week 6 or 7 as opposed to, preseason week 1.
Right. I guess so. I mean, at some point, don't you want the cameras out of your face? Like, you're working on trick plays and shit, right?
I think the thing to root for is, if you're familiar with one of the greatest movies of all time and perhaps the greatest documentary of all time, at least with all due respect to Once Upon a Time in Queens, Mazel Tov again to you, Kimmel, and everybody else. That was really gangbuster stuff. Hoop Dreams is a marvelous picture, because of the serendipity that happens, which is that one kid makes it or then gets knee trouble and everything else at the high end, rich kid, private school. But then the other kid gets kind of punted and goes back to public school, which the filmmakers didn't anticipate. And that's kind of what makes the picture so splendid, that the kid who falls down gets back up. But anyway, I think you kind of want, if you're NFL films, you want the Colts to stink, right? Because what we want to see is what starts to go down when things get sideways with a pro football team. If they're good, they'll be talking about, like, no one believes in us outside this line. We got to keep on day to day. One, come in, get better every day. Like, none of that jive. We want to hear, like, it's not my fault, it's his fault. Like, that's the kind of stuff we want to hear.
It's very risky, though. I mean, going in Dallas season, they thought they were going to have, Dak ready. Obviously, they gave him sound bites and played games with them and everything. But what if three guys get hurt on the Colts and they're a bad team and no one cares about who's filling in for them?
Yeah, maybe they could get a nice bejeweled suitcase out of it. I don't know. That was the highlight of this year's Hard Knocks, was when Zeke gave Dak the bejeweled
luggage. Oh, terrific. My God. And he wasn't done wrapping it. And Dak showed up and was like, really, really.
Wait, somebody took my bike? What? I got to walk 40 feet? No way.
We love betting here. And this is a weird thing. I'm still not sure I understand this. Eagles center Jason Kelce dyed his hair blonde after losing a bet to Zach Ertz. And the bet was that he bet that Zach Ertz would be traded before the season. What a freaking thing to say about somebody. And now, it wasn't in the vein of, you suck, they're getting rid of you. But just to be like, hey, if they don't trade you, I'm dying my hair blonde. Doesn't that feel weird, Martin? That would be the goal. And that now it's like, I'm so glad I lost. Kelsey's like, I'm so glad I lost this bet.
See, that's the thing I don't get. I don't ever make a bet that I intend to lose or I would like to lose. Every single bet that I make, I want to win it. Now, sometimes I know immediately it was a bad one, but I want to win it. I can't understand making a bet for anything that you want to lose, especially not my hair.
Well, that's Jack, funny because you just said, well, he bet on the Browns. So I think it only is fitting that Martin has to dye his hair blonde if they don't get the most points out of any pro football team this weekend. I mean, that stands to reason based on what he just said himself. Right, Martin?
No, I don't want to lose. I don't want. No,
okay, but well, maybe we do. what we could do with Martin? About? Maybe Martin could dye like the Browns helmet into his hairline. Like,
so what happens? So what do I get if the Browns are the highest scoring team?
No, nothing.
Well, I know said you don't make bets that you don't think you're going to win. So you're going to win this. But if you don't on the off chance, then we give you a Browns helmet on your
head.
But
I bet this one, knowing that it's going to have a nice payout after the fact. So
I'm so confident. It's like one of those that you don't need anything on the other side. All right. So that's a fun. That's a fun bet. All right, let's pick our upset pick. Now, Sheck was a little, when he took the Lions over the 49ers last week, I was like, are you sure about this? Is our upset pick of the week? You, I guess they're going to keep it close. I'm like, all right, okay. So then we hang the graphic out there that, you know, I had the Raiders over the Ravens. You had the Lions in print over the 49ers. And then the Lions, they got whipped, but then came back to cover, and you're doing a lap because they caught. I'm like, no.
It was +8.5. I thought that was the standard. I misunderstood what you asked. This I thought you were going to say,
pick,
which dog that, do you like? I didn't know to win the game outright. All right, I misunderstood.
Half the teams are dogs, and half the teams are favorites. So this is.
I thought you said pick a dog, so I picked a dog. That was it. I hit. I thought I
wanted to pick a dog to win, to emerge victorious.
+150
or
higher.
Let's just say +150 or higher. Is the standard, let's say.
Okay, I also did say the Chargers for the record, and they were a dog, and they won. So I did. So by the measure that you...
It's 1 point, +150. It's a true dog. Do you want to go on fire? You want to go with Terry and Howie and those guys and pick underdogs that are a half a point expected to lose?
I'm not familiar with those
names. Not on this show. Not on this show. +150 or higher is an underdog. Martin, tell them what it's like. Give them an example of an upset pick.
I am going with the Miami Dolphins sneaking in at +156 on the money line to send the Bills 0-2.
Love it. Yep. I agree with that one, friend.
Interesting.
Wow. They're going to win that game straight up. Obviously, the number is pretty close.
That is why I picked money line.
The assumption that the Bills have to do it. Like, well, the Bills. I mean, there's no way the Bills go to 0-2. Why not? In that division. Hey,
anyone's saying no way. I think now this is I'm hearing chatter on both sides there. I really do. Huh. I really do.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. They could go 0-2. They definitely don't want to go 0-2. I think he's like 13-4-1 though, Josh Allen on the road. Something like that. Something crazy against the spread. So, all right, Martin, but this is to win the game, Miami. All right, check. You get how it goes. He has Miami to win the game.
I understand, bub. Now, let me just say this to you, though. I do think I just want to say about Martin's pick there. It's going to be hot in Miami. They're practicing up in Buffalo. Practically speaking, Xavier Howard and Byron Jones on Stephon Diggs. Diggs could have a repeat a week one against the Steelers. I mean, the assumption that the Bills are some juggernaut ready to steamroll the AFC East. I have questioned that all summer long. I'm going to go with the Tennessee Titans. A straight-up winner going into Seattle there. The Seahawks, as you say, look pretty good. The Titans looked atrocious. I say that the Titans' performance was anomalous in week one. They're +6.5 and on the money line, +235. Juicy stuff. I don't buy the Seahawks this year. As I say, they're ultimately your fourth-place team in the mighty NFC West. I like Tennessee. Congratulations in Nashville. You're sitting there right now.
So. I'm there now. I could attest the tell people everybody. Oh, my God. They're going crazy about this game and this team. Actually, I don't know. I've not left the hotel yet. But all right. So that's a good. I do like that. Even though Seahawks 7-1, even without the 12th man last year at home, they were 7-1. And now they're home and they beat up. And I know I mentioned Russell Wilson maybe as MVP, but I think this is close, a shootout. and the Titans could win plus 235. All right, that's how you do it, Jack. You go plus 235. Martin, what did you take with Miami? Plus 156.
Plus 156.
That qualifies as an upset, and so do the Panthers. Plus 150. That's what I'm doing. Over the New Orleans Saints, I think it's a hangover game for New Orleans. We don't know what to make out of that Green Bay team. New Orleans showed up. I know I'm playing the emotion of what's going on in New Orleans right now, but I will mention the under is 4-0 in both the Saints and Panthers' last four games overall. Leads me to believe this is a 21-20 type game. The pass rush for the Panthers keeps the Saints and Jameis Winston honest. I know they had six sacks against the Jets and Zach Wilson. That's not fair. But Hassan Reddick says the defense has put the league on notice, Shaq. And I'm putting you on notice. I'm telling you, the Panthers win this game.
I didn't know about that part. Now I really like it. Hey, I have the Panthers in the playoffs. I had them in the preseason, and I stand by that. Also, just very quickly, since you're in that region of the country, SEC country, I'm sure everybody's abuzz about Bama at Florida. Take the Gators plus 15 and a half. You heard it from Damashek.
Oh, man, that's so rough. I don't know. I mean, maybe they're down 17. They score at the end, but that offense just blows out even the best defenses. I was like charting it for the last few years, but that's I know you like that quarterback.
You can just listen after the game. You can just send me a Jerry Orbach when I'm wrong. I'm wrong.
All right.
Sincerely, Sal. That's all you have to type me.
Major League Baseball. I thought we were going to get a good one. A's at Angels with Ohtani on the mound, but not on the mound. Soreness in his shoulder. And FanDuel's taken the MVP odds down. He was something like minus 5,000. And Vlad Guerrero Jr., there's a lot of buzz now for him to win it at 11-1 odds. Like I mentioned, they took it down. Vlad, great year, 45, 103, 317, right up there, potential triple crown. He's in the mix. But freaking A, Ohtani, 44 home runs, 94 RBIs. All right, average is a little low, 256. 9-2, I know he wanted that 10th win, Shaq. That would have sealed it. To me, 9-2, that seals it anyway. Come on, right? How do you give it to anyone else?
In 100 years, in a sport in which that's been around where the numbers are actually relevant as opposed to pro football or hockey, who cares what happened 100 years ago in those sports. In baseball, they kind of still matter what Babe Ruth did. And it was 100 years ago where he was a dominant pitcher and leading the league in home runs and RBIs and all of that. So you say, well, Otani's got to be the guy. Let's not overthink this. But Vlad Guerrero Jr. is taking his team to the playoffs. That does have to matter a little bit.
Doesn't seem to matter.
Even Hench, we talked about this, a good debate on minus three. Listen to that, too, because he's a baseball historian, if there ever was one. And he holds up the fact, rightly points out, Otani's doing it without any added pressure of we're in a pennant race, whereas Vlad Jr. is the chief bat for those Jays making their playoff run. And by the way, talk about there's no precedent for this. Vlad Guerrero is 8 RBIs out of winning not just the American League Triple Crown, the Major League Triple Crown. How many guys in the handful of human beings have ever done it? Names like Ted Williams and Jimmy Fox and Mickey Mantle, legendary names who have done it. I don't know.
There's Triple Crown winners that didn't win it, right? What aren't there? I don't know. I just feel like this is insane. Should Ohtani have 100 stolen bases too? Like, what do you need to do?
I get it's history, but it's not like what Vlad Jr. is doing. It's like, a bunch of guys have done that. It's a very short list of guys who have done that, too. So it's not
Joey Ohtani's in the league when you're having your great year. What do you think, Martin?
The list of people who have done what Shohei Ohtani has done is one. You just talk about a handful of people who have done what Vladimir Guerrero Jr. has done. And I remember vividly when Mike Trout and Miguel Cabrera were up against it, going for the MVP of the American League. And people were talking about how the Triple Crown didn't matter because Mike Trout's WAR was so high. And I disagree with that. But if Ohtani, I mean, literally, he's playing both sides of the ball. And he's great at it.
It's awesome. It's a match. How Charles Woodson won a Heisman Trophy. Was doing that with little splash plays offensively for Michigan forever ago. Yeah, listen, I'm applying. If it's close, then I give it to the guy who's actually in a pennant race. The thing that that stands out, Sal, that where you started the conversation was, I can't imagine, I can't believe that what the Ohtani was plus 7,000 when they took him down, and Vlad Jr. was plus 1,100 versus plus 1,100. What? Yeah. Why would it be that big a blowout at this point?
Because given this guy, all right. So what about Vlad not playing the field? Like,
not only does Ohtani play the field, he's in for nine innings throwing the games on the line. Like, you can't blame his team for not being in the playoffs. He's done all he could. He's pitched well. He's hit well. I don't know what else he's supposed to do.
I get it.
That's like, if Guerrero was a gold glove out there too, then maybe it's, I think the odds are fair. I really do.
You think it's deserving of? I mean, I guess really, I'm getting in the weeds and arguing.
We've never seen anything
dumb,
like it, so yeah, of course it should be the odds should be crazy wide gap.
Hey, listen, I don't want to be a hypocrite because I feel like Roy Green, the last guy to dominate catching the football and was a halfway decent cornerback in the NFL, is oddly not celebrated in football history. So of course, things that are anomalous are worthy of celebration and award.
I knew Roy Green was going to come up. I freaking knew he was going to come up in this Shohei Ohtani Guerrero debate.
Go look him up with Neil Lomax with the St. Louis Cardinals, the football team.
All right. Hey, Sal Perez, though, real quick. I don't want to get, we have Josh Gardner waiting for us. Sal Perez, 45 home runs. If I'm him, I take it easy a little bit here, right? Didn't he tie bench or did he break bench? He's going to break bench's record for catchers. It's 45. His next biggest total was 27. He did 27 twice. And then everything else is 22, 21. I mean, he's 31 years old. Don't you calm down. Don't you, people are going to ask questions, aren't they? Of the 31-year-old.
I didn't know what you were getting at.
Well, I don't know. If you hit 55, they're like, all right, calm down here, Sal Perez, right? Like, something's up and we know it. If your next best is 27 and you hit 38, all right, yeah, I can understand. Maybe people won't notice, but
Brady Anderson,
what the hell's going on?
Is what you're getting right. Getting
that's
at
it.
Here, I see.
It's a okay. Brady Anderson. I mean, he's got my name. I don't want to trash him too much.
I thought that might have been the TB12 method.
Is that what it is? Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Has he said anything? Has he mentioned anything? Why this is happening? We're just like, just one of those years. I don't know. Well, good job by you, Sal Perez. All right, let's bring him on, Sheck. Our next guest. Speaking of baseball, he has a 978 batting average in terms of making me laugh. He's one of the funniest guys in the world, and there is no way you'll be able to figure that out in the next 10 minutes. From an undisclosed location in Maine, Josh Gardner is here. What's up, buddy?
Hanging in there. It's been a tough week.
It has. You were very close with Norm McDonald, who unexpectedly died. You didn't know, right? I mean, it didn't seem like anyone who was close to him knew that he was that sick, right?
Yeah, I just thought he needed to go out and get some sun.
Right. Yeah. I remember that you did some funny pandemic bits with him that you can catch on YouTube. Search Josh Gardner and Norm McDonald, and there was good stuff. And yes, you do go after how he looks in a comedic way, but what are some of your fun? Well, I'll tell you what, one of my funniest memories of, you and Norm are, Jimmy and I joined this tennis club. And we rarely went, and we went to play tennis, and the courts were taken up. And I look, and it's you and Norm versus Artie Lang and Cato Kaelin.
And, oh, my God.
And doubles tennis, Shaq. Yeah. Who won that match?
Could you tell which was Cato Kaelin and which was Josh Gardner?
Yeah.
Doppelgangers.
No, not at the time. No.
Well, there was
how
one,
did that foursome get together?
That was we had a weekly tennis game at over in Burbank, and
you're gonna notice Josh has exactly the same cadence as Norm, and I'm talking about Norm now. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Hey, it's all right.
No, I know it's very slow. Yeah,
we we had this tennis game, but Norm and Cato would always be partners, and both of them were incredibly competitive and, like, you know, throwing rackets and just losing a point would be the worst thing in the world. One week Artie was my partner. One week Artie didn't show up, so we got a substitute, and Norm said, "Oh, you're going to be surprised who it is." It was Patrick McEnroe.
Oh, that should help.
So the J-Man's playing with Patrick McEnroe, but Norm and Cato still thought that they had a chance to, win. And so they won a point, and Cato would point at Patrick McEnroe and say, you know, in your face, like, just the craziest stuff. And, you know, Patrick goes, "Watch this." And he started running them around the court. They're diving for balls and stuff. Cato somehow made one back, and it just sent Patrick back. He goes, watch this. And Cato had fallen in the return, and he splayed out, and Patrick just spikes the ball, hits him in the nuts. Cato's on the ground writhing. It was one of the best things I've ever seen.
Did Norm play? Did he bet? Did you bet a lot in those games? Or I'm sure Norm and Artie bet.
Well, they may have. You know,
I know you didn't.
No. I didn't. I've never turned a card in my life.
Norm would bet college hockey. Mm-hmm. It's hard to find college hockey lines, but he would send. I know he had problems with a bookie who didn't pay him. So he would sometimes send maybe even you to Vegas with like a briefcase full of money to bet legally.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of times it was on college hockey, right? Isn't there a story with
It was, you know, the briefcase, and he would send, you know, an assistant, kind of knew what he was doing. Yeah. But he loved, a good wager and, you know, the kind of the more esoteric, you know, tennis, golf, though, is his, you know, I'd say in order, it was golf number one, football number two. And
he would tweet shot by shot for some of the top players.
Was that intended to be a lot of people would speculate about him doing that because obviously his sense of humor was so ironic. That was sincere, right? I mean, he wasn't doing a bit tweeting about golf shot for shot.
Completely sincere. And, you know, I think that that's, you know, he would have loved to, you know, have been a commentator, you know, completely straight. He really, you know, we do those Masters podcasts and stuff, and you know, we'd it'd be funny there, but when he was commentating on the golf, he was dead serious and he really knew what he was talking about, and you know, he really was often right in his picks.
He loved the golf. All right, well, Josh, I could tell you're very sad. It was an emotional week. You know, I've often said you have a similar, I mean, it's hard to believe this, but you may have been one of his few comic influences.
Well, that's an honor. He certainly influenced me, and you know, it's a shock, but he was a big sports fan too. So there's a nice crossover there. But
Jay, man, I'll tell you something. The two things that earned my keep with him, one was first meeting him and knowing that Paul Henderson scored the game-winning goal against the Soviet Union. That kind of ingratiated me to him. But more was name-dropping Josh Gardner to Norm Macdonald, and that getting a spark in him, like, you know, oh, you know Josh? And then he kind of respected me a little bit because I knew you. And I said this to you a couple of days ago, but how many people on the planet Earth made Norm Macdonald spit take and cackle the way you did? That's a real, you know, whatever else you do in life. I mean, I don't know how many people can claim that. So good for you. And you know, he thought the world.
Thank you, Sheck. Tell Eddie Spaghetti that we're not going to let the Washington Redskin football team beat us again.
I don't think that's their name anymore.
Oh, all right.
I think so. You're right. They're not going to beat
you again. Thanks for coming on. You have anything to plug before we let you go?
Just my at Def Frat Guy Twitter. If you want to,
You are Def Frat Guy.
Wait a second. What?
I knew it. Now he's all of a sudden he hasn't talked. All right. Josh, thanks for coming on, buddy.
Oh, he's the best. He's hysterical. He kept us in stitches, you know, great times all the way through your birthday weekend, of course. But I got to say, with all due respect to the great food and company and all that, I think once again, we were reminded of those old man show days sitting around the office there and crank anchors and otherwise. And always the highlight was the J-Man making us all double over with laughter.
There you go.
The same thing to Norm Macdonald, too.
Yep. I think he needs a new hat, though. I don't know what that visor was. You know, so you know what I would recommend? I think he should go to the Extra Points Arcade, extrapoints.com/arcade. Join one of the many contests we have up, the Pick'em, NFL Pick'em, the Prop Culture, or the Prop Quiz. We got Emmy stuff this weekend. Check that out, extrapoints.com /arcade. Martin, how many did you get right in the head-to-head? I think I got 11. I think Piacenti and I got 11. Went 11-5. We didn't do the Thursday game. What'd you get, 8?
I'm pretty sure I had 9.
9 means like 7, right? Shaq, what'd you do?
I had 9.
You won the other one. You had 9. All right, check that out. Lots of fun. Get a gold.
But only because the Lions prizes. were plus 7.5. Had they been 8.5, it would have been 10.
Well, you thought they were going to win on the field.
They were going to beat the Niners. Why would I think that they were going to beat the Niners? Of course, I would never pick the Lions to beat the Niners. Come on.
Check out Sheck and Kevin Hench. They give their picks on -3. The degenerate trifecta and I go over, I think, 12 games total. 8 pro, 4 college on Against All Odds. And Martin Weiss is with TJ Houshmandzadeh, wide receiver extraordinaire on Lemon Pepper Parlay. Check out their stuff. Yes, on the Money Grab feed. And just a reminder to everyone out there, you may feel like underdogs, but please remember, you're all my favorites.